Welcome to Raw Talk here on M88. I am your host, Yo, and a very special evening in store for us tonight as we talk a little bit about what that famous song from Third Day discusses. Not love, necessarily, but romance is what we're going to do tonight. And we won't be taking your love dedications. This is not a romance station. But we will be talking about romance and how that applies to our lives as Christians. You know, when I tried to explain doing the show to some people, they got a very confused look on their face when I brought up the idea, like, yeah, I'm going to do a show on romance. And I was actually kind of astounded how many Christians were left speechless at that. Really? Romance? I don't understand. So it's sure to be an interesting evening. But first, I just want to remind everyone, hey, it's football season. My producer, Steve Madrid, your team playing right now, right?
It is underway. The New York Giants are slightly ahead of the Cowboys.
Slightly ahead. I think they missed an extra point when we're checking the score.
I think that's going to be the deciding factor in the whole game. But can I just make one Super Bowl prediction?
Okay, go for it.
New York Giants.
Really?
And New England Patriots.
Man, the Patriots look unstoppable. They've only played one game already. So, speaking of romance for a lot of guys, there's the romantic relationship in their life is football and the season in full swing right now. I was kind of happy my team won today, so I'm in a good mood tonight, which helps out when you're talking about a subject like romance. We have a very special guest joining us tonight as we discuss some romance. Deborah White-Smith is joining us. She's an author who has written a prolific amount of books, and it was kind of funny. I don't know why it didn't click for me. I saw her name. It's like, oh, Deborah White-Smith. I recognize that name for some reason. I don't know why. And I started reading her new book, What Jane Austen Taught Me About Love and Romance, and still didn't quite click. And then my wife was looking at the book, and she's like, oh, yeah, this is the lady who wrote Romancing Your Husband, which she has read, and I read Romancing Your Wife. And suddenly it just all fell into place. Oh, that Deborah White-Smith. Well, that's very cool. I'm going to get a chance to talk to her. So that was very exciting when all the pieces finally came together. So, Deborah, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I certainly appreciate your time as we talk about what I think is an important topic.
I totally agree. It is an incredibly important topic.
Yeah, and I'm kind of curious, how did you get into this specialty, it seems like it's your specialty, of romance as a Christian writer? Why don't you give people a little bit about your background and then how you fell in love with writing about romance so they can get to know you just a little bit?
Well, I started out about 10 years ago as a Christian fiction author, and I wrote fiction that had a romantic element in it. And I did quite a few novels, and I'm still doing some novels. As a matter of fact, I did the Jane Austen fiction series. Mm-hmm. But as far as marriage goes and writing nonfiction on romance, when I was seeking God about my marriage, and, you know, how we all do, we always want to blame our mate for the problems in our marriage. And so I was just praying for my husband, you know, that he would straighten up, that he would see the need in our marriage and all this stuff. And God just pretty much broke into my prayer. And God's got a lot of nerve to interrupt us sometime, and he needs to sometime, and he did me. And the thing that came to me was, in everything, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And you know what? This applies to your marriage, sweetie. And if you want more romance in your marriage, you need to romance your husband. And so I began to radically live this out. I started to just radically pour energies into my marriage and started romancing my husband and started modeling. I did not know I was doing all this. I was just obeying the Lord, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I just started modeling my needs to my husband. And so it revolutionized our marriage, totally revolutionized our marriage. And after I did all that, it came to me, you know what? I need to write a nonfiction book on this. So I wrote the book, Romancing Your Husband, which was actually a living account of how our marriage was transformed. And from that came Romancing Your Wife, and then 101 Ways to Romance Your Marriage. And then, of course, what Jane Austen taught me about love and romance is another nonfiction book that has followed the Jane Austen fiction series. So that's how it happened.
Well, that's really fascinating, and I'm so glad that you have been called to do this, because I think, this is my personal opinion, it's something that I have observed, but I think that Christians very often are romance illiterate. Like I said, when I was telling people I was going to do a show on romance, a lot of Christians just seem to shake their head, but why? What does that have to do with us as Christians? That's, you know, I was kind of dumbfounded how many Christians just didn't seem all that interested in this idea of romance, and especially doing it as a topic on a Christian talk show, they just didn't seem to get it. And yet, romance, if there's anyone who should be romantic, it should be Christians. We've been romanced by the God of the entire universe. You know, our relationship with him has been referred to as the great romance. So how can Christians be so, I don't know, illiterate, like I said, when it comes to romance? Have you encountered that same type of attitude a little bit in the church?
Yes, to some degree. And I also think in having gone out and spoken and hosted marriage conferences and those kinds of things, and honestly, I think that the vast majority of Christians, and I'm making a guesstimate here, an educated guesstimate, I would say in the 80 to 90 percentile of Christians have sexual issues. And I think that that's either from suppression, unhealthy stuff, like unhealthy suppression, from things that have been done to them, that we wrap everything up into that baggage. And we don't want to talk about romance in marriage. We don't want to talk about the physical relationship at all. And it's very uncomfortable to a lot of people because they already have pre-existing sexual issues. Hmm. Because the church has failed to some degree in that in the past we have considered all human sexuality as dirty, and God created us this way. He created us as sexual beings, and it is intended to be celebrated by married couples. That because we tell unmarried teens and young adults to abstain, and we should. That is very much biblical. They do need to guard their purity, absolutely. But what we're not doing as a church is, at the same time, giving them a healthy attitude toward sexuality that is expressed in a God-honoring way between a husband and a wife. It's just, don't do this. And then, like, when you get married, you're just supposed to flip a switch and it's all okay.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's not what happens. What happens is the switch doesn't flip, and people, you know, people have hang-ups. They're embarrassed. They and the church at large, there's so many people who have so much baggage in this area, and they don't really have anybody to talk to about it. And so, yeah, you said it's an area of specialty for me, and absolutely it's an area God has called me to. As a matter of fact, we just did a marriage conference this past weekend, and addressed the issue of romance in the marriage and sexuality in the marriage, and did it in a very tasteful way with the women only and the men only, so that nobody's embarrassed. But it's just, it's got to be talked about. It has got to be talked about, and it's got to be done in a very tasteful and appropriate way. You cannot do that sort of thing on Sunday morning with kids in the audience. You know, you've got to have sense in doing it. But, hey, Christian marriages are falling apart, depending on what polls you look at. Christian marriages are falling apart at a higher rate than non-Christian marriages in some parts of the country, the same as non-Christian marriages, or a little bit lower than non-Christian marriages. And that is just nuts.
Yeah.
Nuts.
It really is. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that has occurred to me as I've talked about relationship issues with coworkers and friends and whatnot goes back to this idea that, and you brought it up while you were talking there, how we'll tell teenagers, young adults, even college students, the whole don't. It's bad. It's evil. Yucky. Ooh. And then they get married and we're supposed, okay, now it's okay. But we don't teach them necessarily how to have healthy romantic relationships. Now, I know there's some different schools of thoughts on this so far as dating versus non-dating. Well, tonight we're going to talk about romance, and I would have to say, you know, why not? Even if you don't want your kid to date, why wouldn't you want to teach your kid how to have a healthy romantic relationship? Why wouldn't you want to talk about with them from an early stage just so that they're prepared, so they're not thrust into marriage and all of a sudden like, oh, I got to figure out how to do this whole romance thing for life? And I know it's not your area of specialties necessarily to address teenagers and college students, but what sort of advice would you give to youth pastors when it comes to this idea of like, hey, it's okay to talk to your kids about romance?
Yeah. You've got to, and what we're doing with our kids, and probably what advice I would give to youth pastors is just to tell him or her what we're doing with our kids. I've got a 11-year-old and a 13-year-old, and when they ask questions that I had to answer as it came up, I'm very pragmatic about it. I answer the questions. I let them, my husband and I are very romantic in front of them. We don't do anything inappropriate in front of them, but they know that we have a very romantic relationship. And so what I'm telling my children as part of the fabric of their life is, and my son, you know, I'm saying to him a lot, you know what, Brett, because he watches my husband romance me. He watches my husband get, and these little kind of things I'm about to talk to you, if men are listening, this is very important to a woman. Little things like opening the door for me, meeting me at the van with an umbrella, all those little thoughtful things, picking up my computer case because it's heavy, helping me as a gentleman and a lady. And my son has started modeling that very pattern with me. So I tell him, you know, when you get married, you need to do this for your wife. Those little things mean a lot. When you get married, you need to buy your, you know, you need to get your wife flowers. And you need to tell your wife she's beautiful. And as a part of the fabric of their upbringing, I am training them how to be romantic. And I think so many times parents are scared that if they educate their children about a romantic relationship or even about sexuality, that if you do educate them, then they're going to go act it out. Well, the opposite is true. If you educate them, then they're not going to have the level of curiosity that makes people go act out. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a great point.
I mean, it's like, no. It's the forbidden fruit. Well, if you just tell them and be very practical about it, I'm not saying encourage them to act out. I'm not saying do anything in front of them that's inappropriate. But it's no big secret when you've told them.
Yeah.
You know? And it has to all be appropriate. It has to all be appropriate. And I don't necessarily think that youth pastors need to be point blank discussing sexuality with their teens. But definitely, we have got to teach our young people. We've got to teach our young people how to be good spouses. Now, if a church approves or a staff approves and they do a boys-only thing and a girls-only thing, those kinds of, there are contexts when you can discuss sexuality with teens, but mixed groups, you know, those kinds of things, you got to be careful, especially even with the positive reinforcement thing. Now, does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
And to follow that up, what sort of benefit, because you're talking about how a lot of people, they come into marriage, they have all this baggage, all these issues. What sort of benefit would there be for a young person to learn how to have a healthy romantic relationship? And again, not necessarily talking about the sex. There's more to a relationship than just sex. I know our society tells us otherwise, but that is not true. I saw a trailer for this movie, Good Luck Chuck, and it was that's all it was. And I was absolutely astonished because in the trailer, there's this guy who's doing a little soul searching and he's saying, you know, but what good is, you know, what is sex without a good relationship? And his friend looks dumbfounded, said, "It's sex." Like, that's all there is to a relationship. And I was flabbergasted. It's like, that's kind of sad that that's the type of messages that we're seeing a lot in today's media. And that's the type of messages that kids are getting. So, you know, apart from the whole sex stuff, what sort of benefit would it be for our young people to learn how to have healthy romantic relationships before they start accumulating any baggage? Are you still there, Deborah?
Before they start accumulating baggage, what sort of benefits would it be for young adults to have? Well, first, it might help them not accumulate as much baggage.
Mm-hmm.
That if it's okay to be creative and romantic, then it may not accumulate as much baggage for them. Sometimes baggage, but really, the reason why I was repeating that, because I was really thinking through it, sometimes baggage is created because of violations, those kinds of things. And just teaching on romance is not going to undo that baggage.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So there's some levels of baggage that just teaching on romance is not going to affect. But this whole idea that we are supposed to be more stark in our relationships, less, and especially, I think one of the mindsets is in the Christian community that women, a lot of women, and probably teenagers, it comes from our teen years and even our little girl years, we all want the knight in shining armor to sweep us off of our feet, and that our husbands are the male figure is always supposed to be the one that's so romantic. And I think that is within itself, that whole concept is an element of baggage. And so if we teach young women, especially, you know, that when you get married, this whole romance thing is not just your husband's, it's not just your husband's responsibility. You need to also pour energies into the romance of your marriage. Those kinds of things in your question about, if we teach this sort of stuff before they start developing the baggage, I think that from that angle, that would start marriages and start young women in their marriages in a whole different mindset and stop the frustration that so many women feel. Because so many women have been told by the church, by society, that it's their role to sit and wait. And, you know, Jesus Christ didn't say, do unto others as you would have them do, and this applies to everything but women in their marriage. You know, he said, do unto others. And, you know, another concept is reap what you sow. You reap what you sow, and do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's directly related to you reap what you sow. And the reaping, sowing imagery is just all throughout the New Testament, all throughout. Because when you do something to somebody, they will return. They will do that back to you.
Right.
Okay? It's. I mean, if you get in somebody's face, Proverbs says, you know, a soft word turns away wrath. But really, just think about it. If you get in somebody's face and scream at them, a lot of times they're just going to scream back at you.
This is true.
Because you get what you dish out. You get that back. And we shouldn't, but, I mean, how many times do we respond that way? Because it's the basic human instinct. And Jesus Christ told us this because it is, and you reap what you sow, you do unto others, because it is a basic principle in life. And it applies, yes, it applies to every area of marriage, every area of life, including men and women both in their marriage. And if a husband wants his wife to be more, you know, more attentive to him, be more attentive to her. You plant that in your marriage, you will reap it. You plant criticism, you plant complaining, you plant passivity in your marriage, that's what you're going to reap.
Well, if you got a question about romance that you'd like to ask Deborah White-Smith, you can give us a call, 505-338-5790, especially how we can be romantic Christians, which I certainly don't see any problem with that. It's something I aspire to as a Christian man and a man who's been married for a few years. Why not be romantic? I think God's very romantic when you look through the Bible. So if you got some questions for Deborah, give us a call, 505-338-5790. I've been reading through the first part of your book. I think I made it through about the first five chapters or so of what Jane Austen taught me about love and romance. First of all, when I was talking to your publicist, I thought it was kind of funny. She was saying that they're trying to pitch this book to some other programs, and the producers were saying, who's Jane Austen?
You're kidding.
No, that's what she said. And I was thinking, well, wow, job opening? How can you be a producer of any sort of media entertainment and not know who Jane Austen is? They just did a movie about being Jane recently, and apparently some people had no clue. So I thought that was kind of funny to start with. But one of the things I've really enjoyed so far going through your book is, as I've read it, I was thinking not just of myself and my marriage, but how a lot of the advice that you give and some of the tips that you point out and some of the biblical principles that you have in there are stuff that today's teenagers and college students could really benefit from so far as...
Absolutely. And I talk a lot about... Because, you know, I talk a lot about my my youth and my little romance, my little romantic flurries, and when I threw up on the guy on my first date. all of my deep, dark secrets.
that was classic, by the way. I loved reading about that. And I liked how you brought stuff from your own life. But it was so good how so much of it was, you know, it wasn't just, okay, here's what you need to do after you get married. It's like, here's how you can have a healthy romantic relationship leading up and through marriage. And I liked how each chapter seemed to tie back into 1 Corinthians 13. Was there any particular inspiration there that made you want to tie Jane Austen with the love chapter from Corinthians?
Well, you know, it's 1 Corinthians 13. It's just the famous love chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. It just came to me. You know, I'll just say it's one of those artistic moments. It just came to me. It was probably of God. You know, I have a friend who's a songwriter, and she says, all of my songs come from God, and that's how I feel about all these books. You know, I just feel like it's all inspiration from God. So I just thought, you know, it would be so cool to take the love chapter, 1 Corinthians 13, and just love is patient. Okay, what characters in Jane Austen exhibited or did not exhibit love is patient, and how, you know, how is all that? So then I did develop the stages of patience, and, you know, and then love is kind, who was not kind, who was kind, and then exemplify that, and then also say, you know, and these are ways that you, these are a few things you can learn from that as well. So that was a purposeful literary thing, merging 1 Corinthians 13 with Jane Austen. But I thought it worked out pretty well.
I think it did. And I've thoroughly enjoyed how you've made the connection between the two. I actually want to talk about that a little bit more here in just a moment. But we have Lexi on the line. Lexi, welcome to Ron Talk. And what do you have to say this evening?
I was just wondering, and a lot with youth, I think this is a question. We're taught so much, no, 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 no sex, no this, no that. And, you know, and being a Christian, we want to follow, you know, God. And when it comes to romantic relationships with me, and I think that this is sometimes happens with other youth, I'm sure, is you want to follow God and you want to do what's appropriate. And you struggle, and you guys said you guys were going to talk about this, but you struggle so much with what is romantically okay, and what isn't romantically okay, and what won't lead you to do something that isn't romantically okay.
That's a good question, Deborah. What sort of advice would you have for Lexi on that?
Okay, let me restate what I think you're asking. What you're asking is, as a young adult who is not married, as a Christian, what is romantically okay and what is not romantically okay? Okay, now, I could write a whole book on this, so let me give you a few pointers, and hopefully I won't go into a two-hour.
Take your time. It's all right.
Well, I think first thing you need to do on the what is not okay is understand that there are certain things that lead to the not okay, okay? And you avoid those things. Placing yourself in a situation that will lead to the not okay stuff. If you know, there's two camps in the Christian community now. There's been a couple of books out. One is I Kissed Dating Goodbye, and the other is I Gave Dating a Try. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so some Christians are saying, you know, you don't date at all, you court. And some are saying, well, dating's not necessarily so bad. So I'm going to say, whether you date or court, or whatever structure you put on that, it is very good not to purposefully be alone together for long, long periods of time. And when I say alone, I'm talking about a parked car, in a house, those kinds of things. Because you need to understand that God created this force of sexuality very, very strongly within us. And if you get alone with somebody of the opposite sex for very long, the temptations are going to get very strong. I also highly recommend that you don't do a lot of heavy kissing. You know, put that boundary on, because you're stirring up the coals there. And don't think that, well, you're exempt from it because you will not be. Those coals get stirred. Limit the physical contact. I'm not saying you need to be puritanical, and I'm of the camp. I've got an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old, and by no means do I want them going out, going steady, and neither one of them are doing any of that kind of stuff or dating or anything like that. But I am of the camp that, you know, if my son's a junior in high school and they have a banquet, even though he is not ready to get married, it's not going to kill anybody if he takes a girl to this banquet, you know, those kinds of things, those kinds of social things. But so that's where I'm at. I don't agree that, you know, juniors and seniors in high school and freshmen all need to be going steady and getting so tied up emotionally from one boyfriend to another or one girlfriend to another, which is another thing that you need to understand is that these dating relationships among young people, and if you're not careful, it becomes... As married people, we have to guard ourselves against emotional affairs. And really, when you're single, it can be like that. It's really just one emotional affair after another, after another, after another. And then you set yourself up for that in marriage. And so, you know, you have to guard yourself against being so focused on, I have to have a boyfriend kind of thing, okay? Those are the things, and living from one boyfriend to another, to another, to another, or one girlfriend to another, to another. And I know kids who start this pattern in 6th and 7th grade, okay? Yeah. Find your fulfillment in serving the Lord. Yes, you're going to have healthy relationships with the opposite sex, hopefully. But guard yourself against excesses. And that's the thing, is the church so many times, to guard against sin, we go excessive in the other direction and create another problem, which is avoiding what it is okay to be healthy to do, and that's what I'll talk about now. I've already touched on this a little bit. It is okay, I think, to have friendship, romantic relationships with people of the opposite sex, as long as you understand that as a young adult, if you're back in the good old days, people got married when they were 16 and 17 and 15. They really fell in love. My in-laws got married when they were like 15 and 16.
Yeah.
And they were married for years and had 6 kids, okay? And they stayed married to each other. And so you need to understand that while in my opinion it is okay as a senior in high school to maybe have a friendship, and while I'm saying a friendship, I mean, it's what I mean, more of a friendship kind of relationship with someone than a very heavy, deep, romantic relationship, because you need, what I'm telling my kids now is, you know what, there is a life out there for you to embrace. There are so many opportunities now for young people, and there's a life out there for you to embrace, and while it is okay to hold hands. It is okay if you, I don't know what your religious belief is or not. Some people are dancers and some aren't, but you know, and I've got a friend who she feels like God has called her to teach people how to dance appropriately, you know, because some of these proms are horrible now, but chaste kind of stuff so that it goes back to more of the waltzing and the things that, that are cleaner in style, and the art forms that are cleaner. But those kinds of things, the banquets, those kinds of things, you know, you can spend your whole life running from the opposite sex, and it just creates a problem. But realizing the opposite sex is there and having a healthy balance on it and realizing that it is okay to interact, but putting boundaries on that and saying, I understand that the chemical reaction is there, that, you know, the chemistry is there, and yeah, it's okay for us to hold hands when we go bowling. Those kinds of things are a natural part of being a human being. It's okay for us to group date, but I need to draw a line and say, no, we don't need to go out and do something by ourselves long term. And when I say by yourself, you know, I mean going and walking together in the mall, you're in a public place.
Yeah.
Sitting out under the stars, you're not.
Yeah.
Okay? And if you're not ready to get serious about somebody and you're not ready for marriage, you don't need to be sitting out under those stars.
Yeah.
Did I help at all?
No, it did. Yeah, thank
Great.
You so much.
Did
like the boundary thing. Because I think that they say stress a lot about the whole thing, and like they were, like you guys were saying, they don't stress a lot about what is appropriate for us to do and what isn't appropriate. And I mean, I know that it's of course, and we know no sex, no anything that involves sex. I mean, set those boundaries. But like to like hear you say like you know what boundaries are okay and what are not okay, and like you know don't let yourself be in a moment where you're alone, or you know don't let yourself you know just. I think it's good that we hear that because I think as a youth, we need to hear that. I'm 17 years old and I mean, I still need to hear that. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, I think all the way from being little, just all the way growing up, I just think that we need to hear that it's okay to have a relationship with somebody when you're old enough and you're ready, but the boundaries that you need to have because, I mean, that just like you said, the boundaries that we need to set.
Well, let me tell you something. I go to youth camps with my, you know, with my son, and what I see is, a lot of young teens and older teenagers who are obsessed, absolutely obsessed with the opposite sex. Preteen camp, obsessed with them.
Mm-hmm.
And totally focused on. My little girl is in fifth grade, and she said, you know, this little girl, she comes on talking to me about all these girls and all the boyfriend, girlfriend stuff. And I have told Brooke, I've said, you know what, you are too young for this. They're getting their mind all tangled around this. She said one friend even, it ruined her whole field trip because she found out this boy didn't like her. She pouted the whole time. And my little girl's going, that just is not logical, you know. Of course, I've told her these kinds of things. But as a teenager, and you're an old teenager now. So,
yeah.
As a teenager, understand that I don't know what your home setup is, and some of the reason why some of these kids are so obsessed with the opposite sex is because they don't get the attention from the parent of the opposite sex, and it creates a cavity, it creates a chasm in their spirit that they need that attention in order, you know, like they're craving it. So I understand this is not just a simple dynamic, but even if that is your case or the case of somebody who's listening, understand that God will give you. If it's something that's really God's will for you,
yeah, it will happen.
It's going to happen. I mean, he will make it clear to you. If you're seeking God, he will put that person in your path that he wants you to marry, okay? And to just rest in him and know that you don't have to obsess over the opposite sex. And I'm not just saying you because I think that's what you're doing, but just as talking to teens at large, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the interest is there. Absolutely, the interest is there, and if it wasn't there, it would not be healthy and it would not be right. Don't be shame yourself because the interest is there. I remember being a teen and the interest was all the way there. But life for you, that whole thing about just obsessing over the opposite sex and going with one boy and breaking up, going with another and breaking up, pursuing this one, pursuing that one, whatever, it becomes your focus and then you cannot hear the voice of God. And there's a life out there. There is life out there. There are opportunities out there. And we are God's people. And you and I are God's women. And the major romance that needs to happen at this point is between us and you and God. And if there is a cavity there from a parent that's absentee or you know, a problem, he can fill that void and give us balance. And then from there, we can make logical decisions about our relationships rather than being driven. And it's so easy as young women and young men to get caught up, even at Christian camps and at Christian schools, because my kids are at Christian school, you know, I have been, you know, Christian camps, what I'm talking about. It's so easy to get sucked into all that. And then the whole experience turns into who likes who and who's, you know, who's breaking up with who. Rather than, and we get, you know, kids get consumed with that, rather than I'm here to seek God. I'm here to find out, I'm going to be God's person, you know. None of that is to say that if I were a senior in high school and I were at teen camp and they had Friday night bonfire and walk in the woods, that I wouldn't be delighted if someone asked me, okay? I'm not saying that, but there, I just see so many kids who are just obsessed over this deal. And it's just not healthy.
Well, I hope that helps you out a little bit there, Lexi, with that particular novel that we just heard, and I hope you got a lot of information out of that.
I got the other book.
You were right. Thanks so much for calling in, Lexi.
Thanks.
You bet. Have a good night. And if you got a question about romance that you'd like to ask Deborah, give us a call, 505-338-5790. As you can see, she has a wealth of information. So this is a very unique and special opportunity for you to get some of those questions asked. And I'm glad Lexi asked that question, because often that is the number one question amongst teenagers. Okay, I know it's not okay. I get that. What can I do? How can I handle these emotions that I have? Now, let me ask you, Deborah, with your book, What Jane Austen Taught Me About Love and Romance, again, there's some Christians who feel like, you know, as Christians, there's nothing that culture can teach us. If we're going to learn anything about anything, that should come only from Christian sources, and non-Christian sources, we should ignore those completely. And yet, here you have an entire book that ties Jane Austen together with 1 Corinthians chapter 13, which I thought was an absolutely brilliant move. But what inspired you to mine not just 1 Corinthians 13, because a lot of people do that, but also the archives of Jane Austen to help people understand some principles about romance?
Well, first, Jane Austen was a clergyman's daughter. And I do believe that she was a Christian.
Hmm.
I did my master's thesis on Jane Austen, and I do believe that she knew the Lord. And what she did but as you mentioned, she is accepted in the secular world. She's accepted in the secular world as a great classic author, because I did my bachelor's and master's degree in a secular college university. And so, you know, it was one of the major authors we read at both levels. But what she has done is she has taken, really, Christian values are within her text, within her books. And she has approached morals the way the Bible approaches morals. So what the Bible does is, especially the Old Testament stories, is it shows characters who blow it. And it shows the consequences of that. Okay? Jane Austen does the same thing. She takes good characters who do the right thing, but she also has a cast of characters who make wrong choices. And then she shows the fallout of that. And some of the stuff that happens in those books is pretty racy for early 1800s. Very racy stuff. And it's kind of racy now, too. You know, I mean, when a 15-year-old girl runs off with an older man and disappears and her family's looking for her and find out she's living with him somewhere. I mean, that's very racy. And that is what happens in Pride and Prejudice with Lydia, the younger sister. And so what Jane Austen does then is shows the fallout of Lydia's sin and how that so totally affects her family and the fallout of her selfishness. So some of that is the reason why I did that with her. It's because she's got so much unstated but very much there Christian worldview and Christian thematics within her text.
Well, you pulled out some great principles. As you know, like I said, I haven't finished the book yet, but already what I've read, and I'll be honest, I'm not a huge Jane Austen reader, I've found, even reading your book, I can keep up exactly with what you're talking about without being super familiar with the characters that you're referring to, and I've gotten a lot out of it already. We have another caller on the line. Greg is on the line with us. Greg, welcome to Raw Talk, and what do you have to say today, Greg?
Well, I had one question, then
sure.
I had one thing of advice. I don't know if you guys advised it or not, but something that I had did, because I had a lot of baggage in past relationships, and I entered a new relationship, it was kind of new to me, and the gal that I'm now engaged to had no baggage, and she wanted to abstain until she got married and whatnot, and so it was kind of difficult, you know, for me, and something that we had done was we got together with our youth pastors at the time, a few, you know, years ago, and we came up with a behavior contract, I guess you could say, a relationship contract, and basically sat down with them and talked about what would be appropriate and what wouldn't be appropriate. Because it was kind of, with the last gal, she was talking about, well, what's appropriate, what's not, and you could talk about that all day. But So we came up with this contract, and we listed everything on the contract. And then she signed it, and then my fiance, and I signed it. Our youth pastor signed it. And then we gave copies to our youth pastor, to people who would be like my best man now, you know, really close friends and possibly parents. Showed the contract to her dad, you know, and said, hey, you know, this is our, you know, this is our contract. Anything that, you know, violates this, you know. And so all those people kind of helped us be accountable.
That's pretty gutsy, showing it to her dad.
And, yeah, there's, you know, so there was, you know, there was, but at the same time, you know, if you can have that conversation, I think there's a certain amount of respect that you'll get in the long run out of it. And,
I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I do too.
I think it's wonderful, and I think it's a great idea, and I hope that gal is still listening, because you did it up like a big boy in that, what you said. I think it's great.
We actually came about the it was through a book. I can't remember what the book was called, but the guy from Boy Meets World wrote a book.
Yeah.
And he talked about that, and his, you know, he did the same exact thing. So we kind of adapted the principle from that. So it wasn't my idea. So
what's your question, Greg?
My question was is we have been living a very, you know, we've been doing everything that we are supposed to be doing. Right, and you had mentioned it before about kind of like a light switch, you know, not being romantical, and then all of a sudden, hey, you know, we can be romantic now. And I wanted to know, I don't know, like that. Right now, it's right now we're being very good, and we're not having sex and whatnot, and the kind of the temptation to have sex has kind of sort of went away. And I, at first, was like, oh, you know, this is Jesus. He's making it easier. You know, this is awesome. But now I'm just kind of like, I wonder, like, when we get married, is it going to be like a flip of the switch and everything's going to be all good? And, you know, like, and that's why when you kind of mentioned that, I was like, huh, you know, we have plans of going to a relationship clash with our church and whatnot with our pastors. And I'm sure we're going to learn a whole heck of a lot then. But I just want to know, like, I mean, what, I didn't know if maybe this is, if it's a typical thing, or if any time the things that are appropriate for people who are married come up, I just kind of like shut the door and just kind of run away from it. I want to know if it's like, well, I mean, is it going to come back, you know?
Okay, well, let me ask you something. When did the temptation to have sex go away? Did it go away whenever you signed the contract and you distributed that to everybody?
No. No, it didn't. The temptation was still there. In fact, the temptation was still there, and if it wasn't for the people keeping us accountable, I'm sure that contract would have went void, you know? But, it didn't.
Okay.
Is
the desire gone?
No. No, the desire is not gone, but it's kind of like now if it ever comes up, it's just kind of like it's like it doesn't come up anymore, you know, like before it was like there was temptation to take things further.
You know, and it's a great point that he's making there, Deborah. So what do you think? What sort of advice would you give him? First of all, I'd have to say, all those things you pointed out earlier, opening doors, all that type of stuff, romantic type little things, he could do that now. But what about this whole flip the switch now that you're married?
Yeah, I think what I would say is it's really that flip your switch now that you're married thing. After you're married, I'm sensing that maybe I'm not, there's something that maybe you don't have your finger on, or that I would need to talk to you further to give you an absolutely hit the nail on the head answer. But what I'm going to tell you in general terms, because I think there may be something particular to you, but what I'm going to tell you in general terms is since after you get married, what I would plan to do is not necessarily that you would have sex the first night. Unless the minute you say, I do, that it just overcomes you both and you can't wait kind of stuff, okay? But it sounds to me like that. Here's what I'm going to assume, that you've put really hard boundaries on this and it has made you able to cope with the whole thing, okay?
Uh-huh.
And And but so my gut's saying that's not it. But I'm gonna say that for you just to get to where I do think that probably what you guys need to do is take time. If you're gonna go away somewhere on a honeymoon, take time to warm up to that so that you do romance each other and that you do you know, start out with the first night just some heavy necking and just enjoying it, being together, and then just gradually let your relationship grow to the point to where it does come about as a natural outgrowth, because there's not going to be a switch.
Wow, yeah. Heavy necking. I can't believe we're talking about that on Raw Talk. That's awesome. And let me also say, I find this fascinating, and I don't know if you come across this a lot, Deborah, but it seems like, and I know that they are connected, but it seems like everyone automatically equates sex with romance, but they're not the same thing, are they?
No. Not necessarily. A lot of times when men talk, say romance, they're thinking sex. And when women say romance, they're talking about the ambiance of the whole courting kind of traditional thing that you think of in relationship. But the whole male-female romantic dynamic, whether it's a candlelit dinner or opening that door, is sparked by our sexual differences.
Hmm.
And so sexuality does play into it. See, creativity, our urges to create. See, sex brings about procreation, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, our urges to create are actually rooted in our sexual energy. And it's very positive, because that is, God made it that way, okay? It's all a gift from God. And so we all, when you talk like that, people may think, well, you're just, you know, it's all some kind of dirty thing, and it's not. It's a very beautiful thing. But to say that you starkly separate sexuality from romance, I don't know if you can say, draw a line in the middle and say, this left side's sexuality and this right side's romance.
Hmm.
I think what you have is sexuality on the left side and romance on the right side, and a gradation of shades between the two so that they merge in the middle, you know.
Hmm.
Kind of like a, you know, kind of like a color, you know, one of those color charts that transitions from dark, from black to dark to light gray, or from dark red to pink, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So that you get a gradation of nuance there, rather than this is on the left and this is on the right, you know. But, you know, as for you and your marriage, what I would really, I mean, like for couples who have really just been hot after each other, you know, for weeks in there, and I don't recommend that you do this, but their wedding night, they will have already laid the groundwork for actual intercourse. And it sounds to me like you guys are really keeping some very hard boundaries on yourselves. And you cannot expect to just jump in the sack then the night of the wedding and it's all going to be just ecstatic. You know, I mean, you're going to have to warm up to that whole experience. And there needs to be a warm up to it, so that both of you have that comfort level that needs to happen for a healthy sexual experience.
Well, Greg, I certainly appreciate your call. We got about 10 minutes left, so I'm going to try and get in Berto here and hear what he has to say. So thanks so much for calling in, Greg. You have a great night, all right?
Sounds good.
All right, thanks, Greg. Next up on Raw Talk, we have Berto. Berto, welcome to Raw Talk. And what do you have to say about this whole subject of romance?
Romance? I don't know. Actually, I called to ask the question, but I think that whatever that lady's saying is pretty accurate, you know, because if you're with somebody too close to them and alone, especially if you're Christians and you don't want to have sex before marriage, you better watch out.
Hmm. This is very true.
Well, and let me say something else too. And we were targeting that towards single young adults, but see, I'm a married woman. And I do not, I keep boundaries. I have to interact with men and what I do. And I have friends that are men. I co-author with a man, but I have very firm boundaries on that. Because what people don't understand is whether you're married or single, if you are alone with somebody of the opposite sex long enough, barring that they're a crazy psycho, you know, that's scaring you, those kinds of things. If you do that to yourself long enough, you will start warming up to that person, okay? Back in the good old days, whenever parents arranged marriages and they wanted to arrange a marriage, they put those two people together, the son and the daughter together, because they knew that the sparks would eventually fly a lot of times. And so whenever you, as a married or single person, allow yourself to be alone with somebody of the opposite sex enough, it is a very natural thing for that to start warming up. And we have to guard ourselves. You have to guard yourself.
Hey, I was going to ask you, this is what I wanted to ask you. Say you like someone so much, and she's a Christian too, but the last thing you wanted to do is offend her, and that's the first thing you do, and you're not even going out, you're just friends like that, just like that at church and stuff. What advice would you give me?
Okay, so what I'm hearing from you is that there is someone who is a Christian, and that you guys both enjoy each other's company and like each other,
I like her, but I see that her heart's somewhere else, and I don't know where she's at in her walk, but I like her. But even just as a friend, you know, but I mean, to me, I would really wish that someday, somehow, by the grace of God, God will make a way for me, you know, and her, you know what I mean?
Sounds like a Jane Austen novel unfolding right before our very eyes, or ears,
yeah.
I guess.
Okay, so you're asking, you want to express that to her, but you don't want to offend her.
No, but the thing is, I already offended her, and we've never even gone out. But the thing is, I would really wish that this was the person for me in my life, but I don't know if God's going to will. I know that if God willed it the way you said a while ago, God's going to make the way. But the thing is, I already offended this girl for something that I'm not sure exactly what the reason is, because she hasn't told me or anything, you know what I mean?
Hey, Berto, this sounds like quite the tangled web to unweave, and we don't have a lot of time, so here's what I'm going to do. Pay attention. I'm going to have Deborah White-Smith give her contact info. If you want to go into more detail with this, I'm sure she'd be happy to email you back some advice once you guys work all that out. But that sounds like a soap opera plot that has lots of twists and turns, and we just don't have time to go into it tonight. So hang on and pay attention. We'll have Deborah give some contact info, and you can get in touch with her. All right? All right. All right. Now, Deborah, we're just about out of time. So like I said, is there some place where people can go and find out more about you, or maybe email you if they got some more questions about this whole topic of romance?
Yes, my website is just www.deborahwhitesmith, deborahwhitesmith.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can contact us from the website. Our ministry email address is Real Life Ministries, REALLIFE, mm-hmm. MINISTRIES, at suddenlink.net. And that's suddenlink.net.
All right. Well, just to wrap things up, so far as whether or not romance is a viable subject, I was going to do this at the beginning of the program, but we just got caught up in so much information and interesting things to talk about. If you look at the sale of romance novels, you probably know about this, Deborah. Back in 2004, romance novels, $1.2 billion in sale. They made up 39% of all fiction sold back in 2004. And Christian romance novels are actually one of the most popular genres in Christian bookstores. But if you were to try and do an internet search on the topic of the church and romance, or Christianity and romance and whatnot, the very first thing to come up is websites on celibacy, which I thought was rather fascinating. That's as close as we can get to romantic advice. But Deborah White-Smith, author of several books, including What Jane Austen Taught Me About Love and Romance. Man, there's a lot of stuff that we needed to go over, and we just ran out of time. But thank you so much for spending your time with us tonight, Deborah. And what one final piece of advice would you like to give the audience in general when it comes to being romantic Christians?
If you are married, understand that God wants you to be romantic. Ask God. I have laid on my face in the floor and said, God, give me an idea for my marriage. Give me an idea for my husband. Show me how I can wow my husband. Show me. If you are, and understand that he wants that for us. He wants us to celebrate this, because if that spark is in the marriage, you show me a Christian marriage that's just like this romantic love affair, and I will show you Christian marriages that stay together forever, okay, if you're married. If you're not married, understand that it is okay to be a little romantic, and it is okay to be appropriately romantic. Having thoughts and desires about the opposite sex is very healthy. Suppressing that and pretending it's not there is not healthy, but obsessing on the opposite sex isn't healthy either. I've said it a couple of times. I'm really big on balance. Let there be a balance there when you're not married. Don't be so puritanical about it that God is placing that person for you right in your face there, and you're like so committed to not being romantic that you miss your opportunities.
Hmm.
You know, don't go that so far. Don't go so far as that. Keep a balance on it. And understand that the less sexually active that you can be now, if you're single, the healthier your sex life can be later.
Hmm.
Because once you meet, God intended that for two people only. Once you ever have sex before marriage, it does damage you, and it takes you a while to get over it. And once you ever start having sex, then it's easier to keep having sex. And so if you can guard yourself from that, put those boundaries on yourself, then you will be healthier in your marriage later. But having this stark, scalding view of, you know, running from the opposite sex every time you see them, those kinds of things, which I hear people saying, you know, that they should do. And I know I've got friends who so totally isolate their teenagers, I don't know what's going to stop them from just bolting. You can go too far in the other direction. If you're not married, understand that God can and will give you a very romantic marriage. And even now, you know, instead of pouring energies into chasing people you're not going to ever marry, why not start a journal on, when I get married, this is what I want to do with my mate to make it romantic.
Hmm.
So you are, in a healthy manner, you are expending that sexually creative energy into a journal that says, this is what I want to plant in my marriage. And when you get married, you can give that to your mate and say, this is what I want us to have.
That's
this is
a
what
great
I've been
idea
for us to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Well, Deborah White-Smith, hang on. I got a couple questions I want to ask you here in just a moment after I wrap up the program. But thank you so much for your time tonight. I really do appreciate it.
I had a blast.
I did too. You bet. Well, Deborah White-Smith, author of What Jane Austen Has Taught Me About Love and Romance, also Romancing Your Wife, Romancing Your Husband, and various sundry other titles that I've actually read. Like I said, didn't make the connection until it was too late. I was like, oh, I'm talking to that Deborah White-Smith. What a treat. So I really appreciate Deborah's time tonight. And so far as this topic of Christians and romance goes, and I've said it a couple times during the program, Christians should be among the most romantic people in the world. Why? Because we have experienced true romance. The God of the entire universe loves you so much that he sent his one and only son to die for you. That's how much God loves you. There is few things as romantic as someone who is willing to sacrifice their life for the one that they love. I mean, how oftentimes have you seen it in some sort of romantic mushy movie where the person surrenders their life to save the one that they love? Well, that's exactly what God has done for you. That's how much God loves you. He is wooing you with everything that he has, even his own life of his one and only son, to bring you to him to experience his love. There are few things as romantic as the Bible. If you take a look at it, I think you'll see what I mean. If you'd like to learn more about that great romance that you can have with God, you can contact us here at the studio. Studio@m88.org is our email address. You don't have to go through life feeling unloved. My life is so void of romance and love. It's not worth living. God loves you. God wants to have the most romantic relationship you can imagine with you, and it can start right now. So if you'd like to learn more about that and what it truly means to be romantic, and then for us as Christians, that's just one aspect of our relationship with God that we need to get better at expressing to people, that this is the greatest love affair of all time that we're having with the God of the universe. I hope you had a good time tonight as we talked a little bit about romance, a topic that I'm actually rather passionate about as a Christian and also as a husband. And I appreciate Deborah's time. Next week, I don't remember what we're going to do because I got so obsessed with football Isn't no, that's going to be the week after. On the no, you're right. Steve Madrid, my producer, sharp guy. Next week, the 16th, we're going to have Ron Rhodes on the program, and we're going to talk about the 10 things that you need to know about Islam. Thank you very much, Steve Madrid, for reminding me about that. So that should be a fascinating show as we remember what happened 6 years ago on 9/11 and talk a little bit about that mysterious religion and movement that caused so much heartache here in our nation as we talk about the 10 things you need to know about Islam. That'll be next week on Raw Talk. Until then, I think we've talked enough. Have a shwe evening in the Lord. We'll be right back.